Robert Smith, author of Baseball, meets critic Russell Maloney and president of the Cleveland Indians, Bill Veeck, on The Author Meets the Critics. Welcome to The Author Meets the Critics, the original radio program where outstanding authors are put to the severest test, meeting their critics face to face. Now meet the man who keeps the peace on these programs, your regular chairman, John K. M. McCaffrey.
Thank you, Bob Carey, and good afternoon, everyone. Authors who have faced the critics on this program have included diverse personalities, from Eleanor Roosevelt to Bob Hope, from Henry Wallace to Ilka Chase, from John Dispassus to Adolphe Manjou. The novelist, foreign correspondent, politician, journalist, authors all, have come to our microphone to engage in mortal combat with their severest critics, the nation's top book reviewers. This afternoon, we invade a new and uncharted field of American literature, baseball. It's a subject our guest author, Robert Smith, loves. Mr. Smith, that is, and several millions of Americans. One outstanding exception is a good friend of ours here on The Author Meets the Critics, the well-known writer, commentator, and editor, Russell Maloney. Mr. Maloney, what do you think of this book?
Well, Mr. McCaffrey, counting professional baseball players and the people who manage the clubs and own the ballparks and the sports writers and the radio and television announcers who cover the big league games, there must be several thousand people in this country making their living from baseball. And I don't know just why I should object to one more simple-minded guy coming along with a book about baseball. I don't have to read it any more than I have to go to the games. But on the basis of what I read between the lines, I kind of got to like Robert Smith, and in spite of his liking for baseball, he's only 43 years old, and I get the impression that when he grows up, he'll be pretty good company. Right now, like all baseball fans, he's a delayed adolescent. His book represents the best that a good writer can do when he sets out to write a full-length book about a child's game. And I'm here to say that best is not good enough.
Well, now, obviously, Mr. Maloney is a man without tact, at least on the subject of baseball. However, our guest critic on the other side is a man with obvious diplomatic talents, for he introduced the babysitter to night baseball. Here he is, one of the nation's most colorful baseball leaders, president of the league-leading Cleveland Indians, Mr. Bill Veeck. Now, Mr. Veeck, what do you think of Robert Smith's book, or would you rather tell us what you think of Mr. Maloney?
Well, I think we can take first things first, so let's start with Bob's book. Of course, I'm prejudiced and possibly not a good choice to review a book called Baseball, because the title alone is enough to prejudice me in its favor. But I think that Bob has brought to a very interesting subject, and believe me, that's a masterpiece of understatement, a very interesting subject, an entirely fresh viewpoint. It's a viewpoint of the fan, the fellow who pays the freight. One of the 130 million, and there may be a few less than that because there are some children not quite old enough to understand the game. But other than that, the 130 million people who are baseball fans, I think he's done a magnificent job with a magnificent subject.
Well, certainly there is room for a continued disagreement on this. Mr. Maloney has felt that only this is a child's game. Mr. Veeck, are you a child?
Well, in some ways, I presume I am. Obviously, of course, Mr. Maloney is making that statement from a long distance. I seriously doubt if he's ever seen the inside of a ballpark.
Have you, Mr. Maloney?
Yes, a couple of times.
Did you enjoy yourself at all?
Could he? He probably didn't understand what was happening. He should have read Mr. Smith's book before he went.
No, Mr. Smith's book is not sending me back to one either. You know, I'd like to make one little remark about the child's game aspect of this of baseball, and that is that as played by children, it's much more of an all-around game. You see, little boys playing baseball do everything. They all take their turn pitching, and there's no substitution. They play all through the game. They can catch, they can run, they can field, they can do anything. Whereas Mr. Veeck's employees are all, these middle-aged gentlemen, are all rather specialists, you see. Some of them can throw awfully well, you see. They throw. Well, then some of them can bat awfully well, and they're there to bat. And when one bats and he gets a hit, why, they can send somebody in, and this man knows how to run, you see, and he runs for him. So we get people who among them can play this child's game, but no one man is good enough to bat and catch and field and do everything. That would be expecting too much.
Does somebody want to bring up Babe Ruth at this point?
I was just going to ask him what teams he had seen.
Why, you won't deny that you don't expect a pitcher to pitch through nine innings. If the man gets tired, there's another man sent in. If you're in a spot and a man gets on with a hit, you send a man in to run, don't you?
Well, the Cleveland pitchers are apt to get tired, particularly on the verge of an all-star game or something like that. A terrible ennui can come over them. Isn't that true, Mr. Beck?
Well, I've heard some rumors of that effect. Of course, if you come, it's possible. If you come on days that... that Mr. Lemon and Mr. Feller don't pitch, you're liable to get to see our entire club in action. But we don't always make practice up soon. But I'm interested in one point of this that he's discussing. Of course, I don't know, Bob, what the sale of your book has been.
He won't tell you either.
I presume it's been tremendous. However, I might mention that when you get 82 or 83,000 people... attending ball games, as we had not so long ago, 3 or 4 weeks ago, in Cleveland. Cleveland is a town of about 800,000 people, so that means that 10% of the people went out to a ball game on a given day. And of that 82,000, about 4,000 were children. Now, possibly there are 78,000 people who are not very smart, but I rather think that there are 78,000 who are very smart.
But Mr. Maloney would say there were 78,000 smart children there, or 82.
Baseball is really... the reason for going to ball game is a rather interesting thing, as I see it.
You know it.
Well, I don't know. I think most people go to ball games not only as a spectator sport, but when they go to see the game, they're really playing the game themselves. It's a release valve. When a fella strikes out, for instance, they boo occasionally.
Occasionally. Understatement is your fort, yes. Mr. Beck.
Well, the reason is because they're disappointed themselves. They're really the fellow at the plate. And so they get a vicarious thrill out of all base hits and home runs, and they get a release that otherwise might be used up by going home and kicking the kids downstairs or something nice like that.
And Mr. Beck emerges as a benefactor of mankind. That's fine.
Well, it's... I'd like to be that way. Thank you.
Mr. Beck, I once did a little stunt. I took the New York newspapers on a certain day. It was no special day of the week, just an average day in the summer. And I took the space in these papers devoted to baseball. That is saying so-and-so won the game yesterday, and both sides expect to win tomorrow, and they're going to have this and that pitcher. Just talking about this game, and I multiplied it by the number of cities that have big league baseball and the number of days in a season. And I got, as a free advertising budget for you big league people, you know what I got? $50 million worth of free advertising. Now, if I could get $50 million worth of free advertising for anything.
Even Russell Maloney, now let's say.
Well, I'll say any game.
Well, let's not go too far with this thing.
I could put it over the top as well as you people have put baseball. You see, the average citizen, he does go to ball games. He's been deluded into thinking that if you don't profess an interest in baseball, you're not a red-blooded he-man. And on that basis, I would like to, at the expense of the author meets the critic, submit to a blood count. Mr. Smith and I will have our red corpuscles counted, and I don't fear the outcome.
Well, let me ask you just one thing. You work, of course, for a newspaper. You think the publishers of the newspaper are fairly intelligent for carrying your criticism of books?
Oh, sir, I don't work for anybody. I'm sorry. You've been misled.
Well,
No,
there are long periods when he doesn't even work for Russell Maloney.
Well, that's a nice way. How do you work that out?
Well, I'm just a writer.
Well, all right. We'll say that you write criticism that's carried in newspapers and magazines. Now, you must feel that those people who print your articles... must have be intelligent people. That's why they print your articles.
I feel are after a fast buck.
Well, you believe that you're dull. Well, now those same people print news about baseball only for one reason. Not because they are desirous of giving us free advertising, but because we have become news. There may be something happening occasionally in the world that's as important as the outcome of the Indians' ball games.
Don't say that. Now, let's not exaggerate.
Well, now, look.
The day before yesterday, when all this Brooklyn and Giants stuff broke, I happened to be a little interested in whether the truce was going forward in Palestine and a little worried about Berlin. I was half an hour looking through the afternoon papers before I could find anything but DeRosa and
Stamford Red Sox, isn't it? Well, I would like to come in here, Mr. Maloney and Mr. Beck, with a small point about the owners of baseball teams and being public benefactors, and particularly to discuss owner of a team, Mr. Horace Stoneham. Now, I've been a lifelong Giant fan and very ardent. Their fortunes affected my entire psyche. Now, as far as I'm concerned, never mention the name of the New York Giants in my presence. I'm now a Boston Braves fan. What about
Mr.
Stoneham, a public benefaction?
You know, the primary interest of all baseball owners, I think, is to win pennants. Why? It's just because that desire to win is the most important thing. For instance, you'll spend a lot of money that you know you'll never get back just to
That
to
you
win.
Know you'll never get back, Mr.
Strangely
Beck?
Strangely enough, the financially, the best way to finish is to lose the pennant on the last day of the year. Because, you know, you then develop a lot of fellers that you have to deal with the next year.
Yeah.
That's a fairly expensive process,
believe me. I'd like to pick up something Mr. Beck said, that the most important thing is to win. Now, that if that makes this the great American game, I'm sorry to hear it. Mr. Smith's book, partly unconsciously, gives us a picture of a game where winning, getting the bigger score, is the most important thing there is. And such considerations as developing an all-round athlete or developing goodwill what's called, in quotes, sportsmanship, just goes out the window. You're allowed to rattle people. You're allowed to boo people. You're allowed to try to deceive the umpire. And you'll notice that for a game in which 10 men, or at the most 13, are on the field, you need 3 umpires to keep the thing even faintly honest.
Now, wait a minute. Now, how many men have you got on this field?
Well, I've got a man on each base and a man up at bat.
Oh, I see.
See, there are...
I bet you counted one of the umpires.
Oh, no, I should explain, Mr. Beck, there are 9 men on a side. You know that.
There might be some men. You've been watching our club, where we seldom get men on base.
I think now that the man who must come up to his own defense is our author of the afternoon, Mr. Robert Smith, the author of Baseball. Robert Smith.
Well, first of all, Bill, I want to make an observation about Mr. Maloney. You don't mind if I call you Mr.?
Oh, please do. You can call me Sir if you like.
I don't want the audience to get the idea it's a put-up job and there's no hard feelings. It seems to me that Mr. Maloney missed his calling. For a man to have such definite opinions on things he knows nothing about, he should have been an umpire. I think he'd have been a sensation. He'd be the first umpire with a built-in chest protector.
Got me there.
This business of the child's game. Every form of recreation, I suppose, is a child's game. I know when I first came down here to New York to mix in the exalted circles, literary circles, I was very eager to go to these midtown cocktail lounges where Mr. Maloney and his ilk, how is your ilk, hang out.
Mr. Ilk.
I found them playing a very intricate game. I was sure it had something to do with literary success. I went over and found they were doing something with matches. A childish little game with matches. Other men seem to spend their time devoting themselves to good food and drink. They call themselves gourmets or something, and I've got nothing against that, Bill.
Mr. Maloney's done pretty well in that line, too.
But my idea of that is that it's the grown-up version of a pie-eating contest, but I don't object to a man doing it. I don't call him childish on that account. I think every man is a little child at heart. It's just this business of the free press space that makes baseball, where Mr. Maloney and I are going to disagree very hard. Matter of fact, I think if Mr. Maloney really can take anything, he says, and sell it to the country with $50 million worth of free advertising, the Republicans are looking for him because they've been trying that for 16 years.
Well, it's a question of who's looking for who right this year, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that may be, but I think that... The suggestion that the American public are a bunch of dopes who are led around by the newspapers has been disproved pretty frequently in the past 16 years. They've been voting for a character that 85% of the newspapers didn't care for, a man named Roosevelt. And we have this, you don't mind if
no, go ahead.
I was silent for so long, and I came all the way from Maine, you know. I want to talk about this building character, which Mr. Maloney seems to think should be the
end
aim of a recreation.
Well, that's the claim you make for it in your own book.
Now, yeah, that's wrong. I think you ought to read the book, Mr. Maloney. You might learn a lot about baseball, and you'd find, for one thing, that I greatly belittle the idea of playing baseball to build character. When I played, Bill gives me credit in his review for being a mediocre player. I wish my coach could have heard him. He'd have been pleased to know that I was
at least
made the grade. Yeah. I don't remember the coach ever sending me in to build my character. I guess suppose he did say, go in there, Bob, and build your character. He used to put it a little differently. I think, as a matter of fact, that if you're going to play anything, you ought to play it to win. And if you don't play it to win, you don't put your heart and soul into it. If you don't put your heart and soul into it, it doesn't do you a bit of good.
Well, now, just a minute. I'd like to have Mr. Maloney put his heart and soul into a statement here. To win, Mr. Maloney.
I'd just like to congratulate Mr. Smith on as superb a specimen of double talk as I've ever heard. And I want to quote a remark of the late Huey Long, who was asked if fascism would ever come to America. He said, yes, it will. When it comes, it'll be called Americanism. Now, here we have people, and the anything to win principle is the big thing in baseball. Any method you use, anything you can dig up out of
the player's
private life, to yell at him when he's up at bat, to rattle him, anything you can do, and on a lower level, the matter of bribery, which we've heard about, the matter of ringers and in other leagues, things like that, the anything to win, the fanatic loyalty to a little section, to a little place. I want to suggest that if fascism ever came, it would find its most ready disciples in the followers of this red-blooded American game of baseball.
Well, now, Mr. Vick...
Now you can boo.
Everybody's entitled to their own opinion, I suppose, and you do bump into some weird ones wandering around. there are certain rules and regulations that you have in every game, particularly in baseball, and they're enforced in certain manners. If you can take any advantage of playing harder or being a little smarter, a fellow that doesn't do that is stupid. And, of course, probably wouldn't like baseball anyhow because he wouldn't be smart enough to understand it.
Oh, but now, isn't it true, Mr. Feck, that the players which are largely admired are people like Eddie Stanky or Ty Cobb? Ty Cobb, for instance, according to Mr. Smith's book, nearly once permanently crippled a man named Herzog. Cobb, when sliding, always went in with his spikes high. I believe that's the way Mr. Stanky likes to play around second base,
well,
too.
Well, Mr. Stanky, of course, Eddie played for me in Milwaukee. He's a good hustling ball player. He lacks... possibly a great deal of the physical attributes that go to make a good ball player, and makes up for them by intelligence and hustle, playing hard. Now, if that becomes a crime, that hustle and playing hard, then we better be careful not to have any more wars or anything, because we're going to be in trouble. It's that same determination to win that has stood us in good stead for several generations and through several wars. Now, to get more specific, There has been an occasion in 1919 of bribery. Since that time, I know of none that hasn't been enforced immediately. There are probably fewer individuals in baseball, or certainly as few individuals in baseball, who are not honest than any other sport or any other occupation. You find bad eggs anywhere.
Well, let me ask, Mr. Vec, what about the not infrequent occasion when a fan rushes out from the bleachers and assaults an umpire for a decision that's gone against his home team? Now, is that entirely admirable?
Oh,
and what about
we all frown
what
on,
about
I'm
these?
Sure.
Mr. Smith frowning down. And what about ball players in general as an example, as a big folk hero deal? Every famous ball player, without exception, that Mr. Smith mentions. Took to drink, came to a rather untidy end, or At the very best deal you can hope for is you wind up as a groundskeeper.
All I can think of, you can say about baseball players that they're almost as bad as far as drink and some of these words I can't use on the air, as writers.
No, their needles aren't as sharp.
They're pretty near.
Well, but I think that both of you are taking such an unduly pessimistic attitude here. In particular, I'm surprised, Mr. Maloney, we have found all through this book of the triumph of man over drink. Mr. Alexander, after having won two games and then wandering out after a terrific hangover to win the third game, Mr. Maloney neglects that inspiring parable of man's triumph over the evils of John Barleycorn.
I wouldn't mind if we discussed my book. I thought that's what we were here for. I didn't come to defend baseball incarnate or whatever it is that Mr. Maloney is belaboring with that stuffed club.
I'd like to make the point that Mr. Smith announces one intention, then does the opposite. He loves baseball. He's going to tell you why it's such a lovely game, why it's the great American
game. Where did I
game.
Make that announcement? Then, would you like to read that from the book?
Well, that's the
that
tone of the whole
how
thing.
What a lovely game it was.
Sure, you have all this stuff about how
Mr. Maloney, I'd like to ask you now about some previous misstatements of yours about my
have
book,
I
as
made
long as you're making them. You said at one time at a show in which I was present, you later in the, at least the press notices said that you told me that Ring Lardner hated and despised baseball players, and you read me chapter and verse to prove this
Why,
point.
Certainly.
I don't remember the verse, and I've forgotten the chapter, and I wish you'd re-enlighten
well,
me.
Well, now, here is a very good point. I don't see why Mr. Smith brings it up against himself, but since he has, here's Ring Lardner, who, because a man has to earn his living somehow, when he was starting out, he was a baseball writer. Now, you all know that sports writers are the lowest form of animal life there is. They go.
Let's be a little careful, Mr. Maloney. Mr. Lardner was a very close friend of my father's and spent a great deal of time in our house. So
well,
let's confine ourselves to fact
Lardner
for a change.
Lardner hated ball playing. He hated ball players. He loathed this job, and he wrote stories that dripped with venom and hatred of this
place. I wish you'd quote me one of those stories.
Well,
that's what I asked you the last time, and you dodged me.
Well, good.
Just tell me the name of one of the stories
no
he wrote
story.
Showing he hated
no
ball players.
No story that he wrote does not show his
Do you
contempt.
Mean, for instance, Alibi Ike? Do you know
sure,
that story?
I know
you think
Alibi
that shows
Ike
his venom for
sure.
Ball players?
Certainly.
The only one you mentioned in the last talk was Champion, which is about a prize fighter.
I didn't
they
mention that.
They wear gloves
I
on both hands.
I was misquoted
well,
that, Mr.
He's a little mixed up. That's as near as I ever got to a ballpark.
I have a statement here written by Ring Lardner I'd like to read, and I think it may disprove what Mr. Maloney has said.
Speak.
It's not very good verse. In fact, it's terrible verse. But I think it suggests that the man did not hate baseball, did not hate baseball players. He wrote this later in life. It makes me laugh to hear you guys. This is written, incidentally, about Bill Lang, who you probably don't remember. Perhaps John remembers him. He was an outfielder in Chicago in about 1890.
remember him well. Went to school with him, as a matter of fact.
One of the greatest outfielders that ever lived, and he's still hale and hearty out in San Francisco, and... Well, I'll go to the verse here. It makes me laugh to hear you guys praise modern fielders to the skies. When you were tugging rubber nipples, I saw Bill Lang drive out his triples and go past second on that hit like man of war when feeling fit. Upon his ear, I watched him slide and come up with that old horse hide. 200 pounds of wild Mustang in center field was old Bill Lang.
I don't believe Larry.
Now, I'm
that.
Sure. Oh, I'm sure that probably at before he wrote this, Mr. Lardner was approached by his editor and told, I've got to have a verse about baseball. And Lardner said, you're a hard man, Mr. McCormick, but I'll write something. And with the venom dripping from his pen, he wrote this verse. But I don't believe it. I think that Ring Lardner loved baseball as I do and as Bill does and as John does.
Well, here is Mr. Smith.
I think you ought to give up, Russell. Mr. Maloney.
I want to quote Mr. Smith. You see, this Ring Lardner discussion stems from the fact that he deplores the fact that modern writers do not give baseball an important enough part in their portrayal of the American scene. He's in this paragraph, he's scolding writers for their choice of subjects. And he says some of them write about... poverty-stricken people, and they're realistic, and others that talk about...
Why don't
about
you
them.
Read it instead
All right.
of
he says, still others,
it up.
Are you
still
sure
others,
I can?
Still others turn what talent they have, this is the writers, to investing the simple joys of sex with melodramatic delirium.
Remember, you're on the air.
New paragraph.
How do you know whether he's on the air yet?
Perhaps someday they'll turn to baseball. Now, I want to suggest that a man who says that perhaps someday you will turn from writing about love affairs to baseball, that is a sort of a pre-adolescent attitude.
Incidentally, sex gets about $200 million worth of free advertising in the newspapers. I'm sure that's the secret of its popularity.
Yeah, well, here's...
Mr. Smith, I think that's the statement of the year.
Biological sciences have received their death blow on the author meets the critics.
And Mr. Maloney, if you won't take this personally, I think you ought to have your head examined, really, because the meaning of that statement was quite clear. It did not suggest that they had to drop one subject to take up another, but that they might treat all of them with an equally adult point of view.
Well, you suggest that as an adult writer that I am missing something. I now and then write a little fiction, Mr. Smith, that I am missing something in not writing stories like Out at First and the Infield Fly and so on. I don't feel that I am, really.
Well, I'm sorry you feel that that's your level.
If I were an editor, I would like to commission a story by Russell Maloney called The Infield Fly or The Dropped Bunt.
You wouldn't like it.
Or the substitute runner.
Well, he'd probably have a much readier audience.
Ah, Mr. Vec, you're unkind.
No. There are just more people interested in baseball than any single game.
Well, do you know why, Mr. Vec? Baseball has become the lowest common denominator of conversation. You're standing at a bar having a beer. The guy next to you, you know, he says, well, you see how the game went? You know, that's all he can say. If he says anything
but
about
Mr.
politics...
Maloney, we don't drink beer and we don't frequent bars.
clean liver is all. Well, as far as clean living is concerned, I'd like to ask Mr. Vec and Mr. Smith about these qualities of determination which Mr. Vec has praised so highly in The Baseball Player and saying that they're so valuable in time of war. What if I began to use these in my daily life? For instance, if I went for my Fifth Avenue bus and I put on a pair of spiked shoes... And in getting into the bus, I immediately dropped a baseball bat right in front of someone's feet so that they tripped.
Well, John, have they stopped doing that?
A point well taken, and I concede it to you, Mr. Vec. Mr. Smith, do you have any more comments on Mr. Maloney's attitude toward your book?
Well, I have a great many to make, but you told me some of these words couldn't be used on the air.
I see. Well,
aside
from that.
I know that he did say, using a word not to be used on the air, he referred in a very unflattering way, should we say, to the people who attend baseball games. He described them with a short four-letter word, which is unflattering, to say the least. And I think if he went to a baseball park, he'd see, instead of his incipient fascist that he imagines, he'd see... people of all types. He'd see
the cream of society.
They let everyone. Sure. That's right. They let everyone in there. They have whites and Negroes. They have Jews and Slavs and Russians. On certain days, they even let in the Irish. And I think that you'll find there an excellent cross section of the American working class. And if those people are to be described in this unmentionable word, I'm glad to accept the title myself. And I know Bill is too.
Count me with you.
Oh, fine. I'll set you down then.
Fortunately, we can be excluded from the literati and just be a regular American.
Don't figure
people.
Me in with the literati. I'm just
There's a handshake show in the air, Bill.
I'm just a red-blooded he-man who doesn't like baseball. Is that a contradiction in terms, gentlemen?
I think that we should mention that Mr. Robert Smith's book gives us a very good history of baseball. Everything
it
practically that.
That
has
I
ever happened in baseball is in Mr. Smith's book. And also that we have a discussion of contemporary personalities in baseball and what is happening on the current baseball scene. All of your heroes and all of your enemies are in Baseball by Robert Smith, and I think that that's one of the reasons why people, unlike Mr. Maloney, who like baseball, are going to read it. But now I'm sorry, gentlemen, the time's up for both the author and his critics, and here is Bob Sherry to give you a preview of our next book on The Author Meets the Critics.
Next week, The Author Meets the Critics turns its critical spotlight on a motion picture. A new movie about to be released in theaters throughout the country. It's The Time of Your Life by William Saroyan, taken from the Pulitzer Prize-winning and Drama Critics Circle Award play. We'll bring you scenes from this new movie and a lively discussion pro and con on The Time of Your Life next week at the same time. We hope you'll join us. And now back to John McCaffrey.
Before closing, I'd like to thank Robert Smith for coming here today to discuss baseball and to thank you, Russell Maloney and Bill Vec, for joining us. This is John McCaffrey saying good afternoon for The Author Meets the Critics.
The Author Meets the Critics is produced by Martin Stone, directed by Arthur Austin. This is Bob Sherry speaking. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.